Hey guys, I'm Em from the fashion and beauty blog, The Lipstick Fever. When I moved to London over a year ago, I felt like there weren't a ton of obvious resources for women moving abroad or moving cities. My biggest source of strength and growth for my big move was through the inspiring and amazing women from all over the world that I've been meeting. Now, I want to share those conversations with you. We're going to hear from female entrepreneurs, industry experts, and some major female badasses on a global level. Hello, hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of the Big Move Podcast. I am your host, Em, from the fashion and beauty blog, The Lipstick Fever. And today I am with my guest, Sedge Beswick. She is the founder and managing director of Scene Connects, which is an award-winning, innovative, globally based influencer marketing agency. In 2019, she launched Connects Cast, which is an offshoot podcast production company, hailed as the new wave of influential sound. She's previously worked at Red Bull and 3K, and Sedge has moved to ASOS before setting up 2Connects, working as their global social media manager, taking them from a lesser-known fashion hub to the world's most visited e-commerce clothing site. Her current client list at her agency includes Nike, Very.co.uk, Jo Malone London, Jack Daniels, and Facebook and Instagram, just to name a few. Sedge, welcome to the podcast.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Thanks for coming along. It's nice to meet you too for the first time in person.
And I know, I've heard so much about you.
And you too. And you and I were just chatting. You're coming off of like a bit of a holiday, right? You were in Ibiza, like which one is it?
I say it wrong. I say Ibiza, but I'm Northern.
Okay.
So it's Ibiza.
So funny enough, I heard from a local that it's Ibiza as well.
Oh.
But then I've also like come back to the UK and then I hear mixed things once again. So I feel like it's just...
Either work. Tomato, tomato. You can get away with it.
Yeah. So how was it? Was it a crazy party? Like
we got
DJs?
Off so lightly because it poured down with rain from the second we got there to the second we left.
You're joking.
Nope. No.
My gosh, I would have imagined it was nice there too this past
weekend.
And
I'm also like the most boring person on earth because I'm so tired because of this job that there's like a running joke within my friendship group that I can't get past 10 p.m. when I'm away. So I did stay out to like 2:30.
That's
I've like
pretty
really
good.
Excelled all
That's
of my expectations. But no, the girls are getting in at like 6, 7 a.m. because they were staying in bed till 4 p.m. because they didn't need to worry about suntans when it was raining.
Oh, wow.
So yeah.
So it kind of worked out for them.
Yeah, it worked out for them. I finished a few books. It was great.
Oh my gosh.
I'm a grandma.
Ideal. Nice little mix. I can relate to the grandma thing.
Yeah.
So don't feel
too
bad. Okay. So I always ask my guests a couple icebreaker questions. So we'll get into those. What are the first three things you do when you wake up in the morning?
I'm really terrible in the morning because this is probably the worst, like trying to get your work-life balance. The second I wake up, I cannot get into the office soon enough. So I wake up, I check WhatsApp, I check my emails to make sure nothing has happened overnight with any clients that are in the US or in Australia. I get in the shower as quickly as I can and I get into work as soon as I can. And then I get my coffee and then I look at my inbox.
Okay, what time do you get in the office?
It really varies because no day is ever really the same.
Yeah.
So I could be, like yesterday I was in Liverpool with a client.
Yeah.
Tomorrow I'm with Instagram. So if I'm here, I tend to get in now at the moment about 7:45.
Okay, that's pretty early to start like your office day.
I like it before everyone else is in.
Yeah.
I get to like concentrate and get some stuff done.
That's so true. It's like quiet, peaceful.
Yeah, and by 3 p.m. I'm like totally useless. 3 to 6, my brain doesn't work.
Need that like next wave of caffeine, which leads me to my next icebreaker question. What's your favorite alcoholic beverage?
This makes me sound like such an idiot, but champagne. I would drink champagne all day, every day if I could.
Okay.
This comes from my mom.
Nothing wrong with that.
Yeah. My mom will literally drink gallons of champagne every day.
Really?
Yeah.
I love that. Are you an Aperol Spritz person or no?
No, it's too sweet.
Okay, fair.
Yeah.
Fair. Kind of like one or the other, I feel like.
Yeah, no. Give me the champagne.
Champagne all day, baby. Okay, cool. So we'll just kind of chat on your background in a really general sense. Like, where are you originally from? Like, where did you grow up?
So I grew up in a town called Whitchurch, which is in Shropshire. So it's about a 3.5-hour drive from London.
Okay.
Really, really small. And that was it.
Small town girl. Love it. And then how long have you lived in London?
This is terrifying to think of. So I have lived in London for just under 9 years. I think it's been like 9 months, but yeah, just under 9 years.
Okay. And then you went to uni in
Nottingham,
the UK.
Yes. Okay. Yeah. So I was there for 3 years.
Okay, cool. So born and bred, you have not lived outside of London.
Only for uni. Yeah.
Okay, cool. And then what do you kind of love most about working and living in London? Would you say?
The thing I love, living, you can just never get bored. There is always a million and one things to do, whether that is, like, my other half is obsessed with sneaker drops. So, like, we are the first people at Selfridges at, like, 9 a.m.
I saw that on your Instagram. I'm intrigued. Can you tell me more about this?
Yeah. The weirdest part of this is that he's, like, got this obsession through my mum and my brother.
Okay.
The last one was the Travis Scott sneaker drop.
Sure.
Where there were 1,000 in Offspring and Selfridges. Okay. People were queuing for like 5-6 hours. I refused to let Daniel queue. So I did push him in with a 40-minute wait, like that kind of like proud bossy mom, just getting him in the line. He got his trainers. Everyone's happy. But yeah, London is just, there's always a million and one things to do.
Yeah.
People watching is amazing.
Yeah.
And from a work point of view, again, there's just so much going on.
So much going on. And today we're just chatting. We're in Shoreditch. So we're in East London, and you're in this sort of office space. It's kind of like a WeWork, kind of like a shared office space. And we were just saying it's so Shoreditch, like
and every cliche agency.
Yeah, totally. Every time. So I live in Marylebone. So I'm in West London. What I call central. Mm-hmm. And every time I come to East London, I feel like I have to like put on my cool, like trainers or like a little bit more of an edgy outfit, kind of like look the part.
Yeah. I feel that.
Yeah. You must feel that tremendously. Like, so for our audience, like how do you compare East London versus West London?
The style is one. Everyone here is very hipster with the beard and a lumberjack shirt. but like even in this office, there is like a million different ways in which people dress. Whereas I think West London is a bit more glam.
Yeah.
So I would go to West London for shopping.
Yeah.
And I would come here for like quirky new up and coming places to eat and drink.
Yeah, totally. West London is quite like prim and proper, like pretty London, I always say.
Yeah.
And Shoreditch is so much like Brooklyn. Have you spent much time in New York?
Yeah,
okay,
yeah.
So you get it.
Yeah, completely.
Yeah,
completely.
It's like completely the same thing. Okay, cool. So we'll kind of get into your really impressive career trajectory. You're so young. You've done so much. But where did your career really kind of start for you within like the digital space, would you say?
Well, the hilarious part of my career is that I actually got my first job through entering a competition on social media. So I was at uni and I worked for Red Bull for 3 years while I was there driving the Red Bull cars. I don't know if they have that in the US, but
they do.
Yes.
They do. I've heard of this before.
Still to this day, I'll meet people and they'll be like, oh, so did you drive the Red Bull car?
Stop. It's hysterical.
Yeah. Still a thing. Mm-hmm. But I, in my second year at uni, saw a Facebook post that was, what would you do if you had £25,000 to throw a party? And you had to say in 25 words. I was obviously a student, a lot of time on my hands. I thought 25 grand to throw a party would be brilliant. And the way in which you then won was to get the most people onto a Facebook page in a week. So I would go out on a night out and literally just like write my Facebook page on people's arms, and I came second. So I had 8,000 people, I think it was, in 7 days onto a Facebook page. Algorithms are obviously very different to what they are today.
I was going
to
say that was years ago. So yeah, it must have been super impressive.
Yeah. The weird thing is the amount of people that I'd like met on holidays when I was like 12, and with a name like Sedge, I get away with nothing. Yeah. So all these people on Facebook like, oh my God, I've just heard about this through like my great cousin over in whichever city. But the company that ran that was 3UK, the phone network. So they gave me a call when I finished uni in the May, the year later, and said, we're about to set up a social team. Do you want a job? Me and my mom had a small argument because I was like, I'm going to go traveling. I'm going to go find myself. She's like, you'll get a job. And I'm really, really glad she did. I was the youngest person at 3 by quite a way. It was quite a male-dominated business just because it was tech.
Sure.
And actually, I rocked up on my first day with like Union Jack leggings, a sheer shirt, some Jeffrey Campbell studded boots, like, oh, the real world is here. But it made me really, really quickly grow up and really understand like the working environment. And my boss was phenomenal. And so she really invested the time to make sure that I knew everything from like how to present to how to budget manage to how to write social copy for a business rather than like for myself.
Yeah, yeah. What a cool opportunity too. And especially at that age, like that's like kind of the dream job. Like,
it was
and
super
social
fun.
Media was at its like infancy.
Yeah, trying to explain to people then what I did versus like now I feel like most people I meet, their job does a degree of social media. Then everyone was like, so you're just like sitting on Facebook all day? And I'm like, no, I like sell phones off this and the phone's like £800. Like I'm doing driving sales and driving awareness for this business. And people just like, yeah, cool, you sit on Facebook every day.
That's insane. And then so was there a job in between that role and ASOS?
Nope. So I went, so my degree was in fashion marketing. So I always kind of had the itch to get back into, well, not back into because it was kind of the first time, but a bigger business doing marketing. So I did 18 months at Three. And then I went in as a social media exec, I think my title was.
Okay.
And again, it was the first person in the social media team at ASOS. It was this kind of slightly weird role where no one really knew what I was doing, but equally I actually didn't realize how much I'd learned at Three. So I was able to quite quickly come in and make quite a few changes. And then by the time I left 5 years later, there was like total, including like the content creators, like 32 people in the team.
Wow. And you had such an impact there. Can you sort of talk on that a little bit from like a social media standpoint? You kind of saw that progression probably.
Yeah, and I was really incredibly lucky because Nick Robertson, who is the founder of ASOS, is one of the most visionary, charismatic human beings you will ever meet in your life. And he really had this ethos of like, just try it and learn and see what happens. So his whole mentality was around being really customer centric. And what better way to speak to the customers than the people that are tweeting, sending in Facebook messages all day, every day, 24/7. Yeah. And so I had quite a good kind of awareness in terms of like what I was doing with him. He would come, I think he still thinks my name's Sedgy rather than Sedg, but he'd literally come to the desk and be like, Sedgy, what are we doing this week? And it wasn't the same way like at Three where the budgets were like watertight, and here at the business, I know every penny that's being spent at any point. Whereas there I would go like, I think I want to do like a live Twitter game and I think I need like 10 grand to do it. I didn't know what the KPIs would be because no one was doing live at that point. Obviously, again, now roll on 8 years, live is integrated into most platforms. But the trust that he had really did give me the opportunity to just go out, do some things, win lots of awards at ASOS, which was brilliant, grow the team.
That's
so
awesome.
Like roll back to the first few weeks. I got a D in my French GCSE at school, but I was writing the tweets for ASOS France because there was no one at that time to do it.
Oh my God. Were you just on, was Google Translate even a thing then?
Like, yeah. I'm sure it is not as slick as it is today.
Yeah, that's true.
But I remember the French editor starting and was like, who? And like her very French thick accent. Anise was like, who has been running this Twitter feed? And I was like, oh God, that's me. And she was like, you cannot speak French. And I was like, I'm fully aware. But people were tweeting us in French. Someone had to reply to them.
Yeah, you kind of had to like take it all on.
Yeah.
It was so new. That's insane. And it's cool that they gave you so much flexibility too.
Yeah.
You were just kind of like, here you go.
Exactly. Like, no, it was a brilliant place to work. And it's been obviously brilliant for my career. It's quite a hard place to work. I think everyone's like, yeah, you get to like have 40% off ASOS and everyone's like in the pub at 3 p.m. on a Friday. But actually like you play hard, you work hard. Towards the end, I was absolutely exhausted and just kind of couldn't have done another year there.
Yeah. And you're probably doing the job of like 10 people by now. Like I'm assuming their social media team is massive at this point.
Completely.
Yeah. That's insane. So then, okay, and then from there, how and when did Scene Connects, your agency, kind of come about? You mentioned to me, I think, you saw a gap in the market when it came to, like, influencers. Like, so how did that kind of come to fruition?
Yeah, so this is a bit of a happy accident, good timings. But I did a lot of work with Nike when I was at ASOS. So it was through our commercial team. By this point, I'd built a good relationship with a couple of people in Nike. I was actually offered a job in Nike, US. But all fun things with visas didn't work out. And I really was at a point in my career at ASOS where I was like, it's a struggle to get out of bed. And so I was chatting to a couple of people and I, through Nike, met a woman called Amy Thompson, who was the founder of two of the agencies in this office space we're sitting in. So Amy is unbelievable. You've never met anyone with a mind like hers. And she basically, through Nike, went for a few cocktails. And I said to her, like, this is what I think from an agency point of view, I think this is what's missing. And she kind of did a, well, why don't you just put your money where your mouth is and see what you want to do? And I was like, whoa, I have never even worked with agencies. ASOS does everything in-house. And I was obviously there for 5 years. I was so junior at Three. I was so junior at Red Bull. Like, I didn't have access or exposure to the way in which the agencies work. So we agreed that I would do 6 months trading under her business, Scene Presents, which is events. Mm-hmm. And I would see if I could get into a rhythm of it and see what it was kind of like. At the same time, I was interviewing at Instagram, which have about an average of like 20 interviews. And I was at interview number 17. And this woman called Lauren, who used to be Beyonce's manager in the US.
Oh my God.
She was unreal. So I said to her, I was like, I'm a bit of a crossroads. Like, I know I need to leave ASOS, but I have this offer from an investor to set up an agency with no agency experience whatsoever. And I'm chatting to you guys and I'm pretty far down the process. If you were me and you're in my shoes, what would you do? And she was like, girl, I probably should not do an American accent when I'm sitting with you.
No, please do. That's amazing.
But she was literally like, do it. And a role at Instagram will always be here for you. And if it doesn't work out and you hate it after a week, if you hate it after a year, let's just pick up the phone and let's chat. And I was really, really fortunate. So one of the things that happened at ASOS was the founder, Nick Robertson, stepped down and the CFO, Nick Beaton, stepped in. So two brilliant, brilliant guys, but two very different ways of handling themselves and two different visions for the business. And quite a few people at senior level left ASOS around the same time as me. And because I was in this like more junior role, but this thing that people like didn't really know, I had amazing exposure to like directors, heads of. And so when I set up the agency and obviously like spammed everyone on earth being like, woo, here I am, here's Scene Connects. Quite a few people from ASOS and like the ASOS alumni got in touch and said, well, actually, I'm here. Let's have a conversation. And in my first week, I signed the first client. I hadn't even met the fine. So the way in which it works with my investor is that he has six agencies, mm-hmm. and we have shared resource. So we have a finance director, we have a new business director.
Okay.
And I had never even met our finance director. And then after our first month, he was like, what on earth is this? And why on earth is it only at this amount? And I was like, well, no one told me what I should be charging. That just seemed like a lot of money. So I had to learn very, very quickly what we were doing.
Yeah. You are so new to it. You just kind of had to experiment and wait, yeah, and wing it, absolutely. So you said you saw something that was missing from an agency's perspective. Like, what was that one thing that you were like, this is what I'm going to be able to offer?
I got inundated when I was at ASOS and to a degree at Three, but from people saying, we're an agency, we'll send your customers ASOS vouchers, Red Bull cans, phones, and we'll get them to talk about your business. And actually, no one really understood how geeky we were at ASOS. We had too much data.
Sure.
So actually, every person that wore ASOS product, we would track the impact that had on that sale, the impact it had on our social following, the response that it had in terms of sentiment. And so if I went back to these agencies and I was like, cool, that's great. I can give 10 people an ASOS voucher, but what does that actually mean? No one could answer the question. So that was the thing that we do. So the mm-hmm. reason why the business exists is influencers get slammed constantly. This year more so than ever, thanks to all things Firefest.
Sure.
And my point in the market, I guess, is this shit works when you do it the right way. And there are so many people doing it the wrong way and treating it like a badging exercise. So here's 10 tops, here's 10 random people. Let's hope it does something. So much more around the data and the archetypal alignment to make sure you're working with the right people, and then you'll see the results.
Sure. No, that makes a lot of sense. So you're kind of tying in like the data with the insights and just like really driving the value home for all your clients, it sounds like.
And the first person I hired was a data analyst.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that makes so much sense. Do you have sort of main tips for someone who is like looking to start their own business or agency? Is it like investor related? Is it like something else?
One is like mentally prepare yourself for how exhausting it is. And I am a really loud, really like constantly energetic person. And I think that often throws people when I am actually like the 24/7 graft that goes into it, and it is really draining. So it has to be like the right time to be able to like fully give yourself the best chance of it working. And my two things that I always say is now, which I wouldn't have said previously, unless you are unbelievable at the numbers, mm-hmm. get a finance director as soon as you can. Mm-hmm. I cannot even begin to explain the ways in which the finance director that we have has been able to like really accelerate the business. And he just has made me think about things in a totally different way.
Yeah.
And the second is hire people that are better than you.
Yeah, absolutely. And you have, you said 15 people working under
you
at this
point. Yeah, we do. Just mental.
Yeah, it is mental. So do you experience overwhelm? Like you have so much going on, you're running the day to day and you have your team. Like how do you handle that?
Yeah, so when I started the business, I ended up, other than the data analyst, I ended up with quite a junior team. I tend to hire people out of uni and I train them up and I lecture at quite a few different universities. So I know who's good and who's enthusiastic and who's passionate about the space. And actually I got to a bit of a point after about 18 months of the business where I was like, oh, actually, if I'm going to spend as much time as I need to in the US with our clients or even in Liverpool and Manchester with our clients, I need senior people in the team that can really bring that agency expertise. So for me, the thing that I found the most challenging is recruiting people that are culturally a phenomenal fit for the business, but also for our clients. So so like the recruitment piece is one. And the second is like really just investing in the team as much as we can. And I'm so lucky that like one of the girls has been with us since like the second month that we set up, one since the third month. So it's really looking after them as well as the clients.
Yeah. And so day to day, is that like how do you handle your stress? Do you like try to find time for yourself? Do you like meditate? Do you like work out? Like, do you have any kind of outlet?
I would love to be someone that meditates, but I couldn't even bring myself to that point. I'm the person that like laughs in a yoga class because I'm like, someone wants me to be quiet for 45 minutes. Are you joking? And I do struggle and my work-life balance isn't brilliant. Daniel, my other half, is great because he also runs a business. And actually often when we just get home at night and we're chatting over dinner about like what each other's challenges are or the things we need to overcome for the week, then we're like, right, okay, we've now got it off our chest and we've had the chance to like talk about it and to work through those things, and I can then switch off better than I ever have done before. But my team would be the first to say, like, now that you can schedule your emails in Outlook, I think I've made their life so much better, because I, as I said at the start, like I could be anywhere, 10 different places in one day. Like I have a pitch after this, I've then got 2 client meetings, then I've got like something on in the evening with clients. So often I can get into my inbox the first time in a day at 11 p.m.
Right.
And I never want to email people at 11 and then check their emails before they go into bed and then feel anxious about the amount of work that they've got to do.
Sure.
So now I can schedule these things to like be more, a bit more 9 to 6 for their sake.
Yeah.
But yeah, like even in Ibiza on a hen do, I was doing my emails, reviewing pitch decks.
Yeah.
And I think I'll always be that way.
That's fair though. I mean, it's like kind of like what works for you, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So scheduling emails, that's actually a really good tip. Do you have any other organizational tips? Like do you live and die by your like a Google Calendar, or are there like other things that kind of keep you really organized?
So the best piece of advice I ever got was when I worked at Red Bull, and my boss said to me, and it's just something that's really, really stuck with me, was a 5-minute rule, which is ultimately, if you can do it in 5 minutes, why would you add it to a to-do list? Just do it.
Yeah.
And I've always, always done it. So like, it feels like a pain in the ass to like ring a restaurant and to book a client dinner, but you can do that in a couple of seconds. And I've always said it to my team, and I can really pick up on a lot of those guys doing it as well. And it just means I'm never overwhelmed by what I've got in front of me. And I can't go to sleep at night unless my inbox, so if you're over 12, it goes, looks like you've got a full inbox. Whereas if it's 11 emails, you've got a gap. And I'll never go to bed unless there's less than 11 emails in my inbox.
Oh my gosh, I love that. That's like down to the
weird
T.
OCD.
No, I love that. I used to work in ad tech, and I feel like I read a productivity book years ago, and that was one of the biggest ones, was like, if you can get back to that person and like tick that off your list in right, like under like a few minutes, 5 minutes, whatever it is, just do it.
Yeah.
Like, don't let those little things pile up, and then like prioritization, which I'm sure you're used to doing with all the projects you have going on at the same time. That's awesome. So kind of moving on a little bit, I want to hear more about Connects Cast. So what is it? Why did you sort of start it?
So super hot off the press. We launched Connects Cast a week ago.
Oh, wow.
So Connects Cast is our It's a sister agency within our group. I'm the founder of that, as well as Scene Connects, but it's a podcast production agency. So that could be securing sponsorship for someone who is about to launch a podcast. So an example of that is we have just got very.co.uk to sponsor Frankie Bridges' podcast Open, which launches in September. Heard it here first.
Love it.
Or we do the like end-to-end production of a podcast. Yep. That could be helping people to storyboard. It could be helping people to find guests. It could be, as we were chatting earlier, like actually running a podcast is really hard work. It's not like, cool, here's two mics, slap it on iTunes, happy days. You have to do all the promotion and all the PR around it as well.
Yeah.
And for me, so a few geeky facts, but like 63% of people in the last 12 months have purchased from listening to a podcast. So in terms of from a business point of view, you actually have someone's attention for however long it is, 28 minutes, 32 minutes.
Sure.
And at that point, they are in a car. They are on the tube. They are going into work. They're not scrolling because they can't if they're driving. Don't scroll on your phone.
Right.
And so this undivided attention just really means that actually from a brand point of view, you can really cement what your message is. From an influencer point of view, a celebrity point of view, you can really give people more than you can on just an Instagram post. And I've really, really started to see a change in our clients, but also our influencers, celebrities that we work with going towards more long form content.
Yeah, absolutely. And that like leads me to the next question of like kind of the future of podcasting. I feel like it's just starting to really, really kind of get on the rise, if you will.
Yeah.
So you must be seeing that a lot on your side for influencers.
Totally. And I think I was obsessed with Serial, like absolutely obsessed, as I'm sure most people were. And on average now, there's 300 million downloads and it's still growing for Serial. And I think that was a real tipping point for podcasts where people are like, oh, actually, I didn't even know this app was on my phone. And a few people have experimented, dabbled in it. And once you get a podcast that you really resonates with you, so like mine is around like how to fail, brilliant. How I built this, unbelievable.
Yeah.
And like every episode, I have to find myself that half an hour to put aside to fully listen to it. Cause like heaven forbid that someone listens to it before me and that they like know something and they learn something. And I also, even just down to the team, like there's 15 of them and they are all listening to different podcasts. They are all coming in talking about, God, you'll love this one. Have you thought about this? Same as our clients. And I just thought, I always think, like, even when I set up Connects, I was like, God, well, people are already doing influencer marketing, so I'm setting it up really late. And I was totally wrong. And we were really lucky in terms of timings. And I think, touch wood, hope it's the same thing with the podcasting agency as well.
Yeah, absolutely. It's super, super exciting. Both of these things are kind of like coming to head at the same time, it sounds like, for you. And then, so you have your podcast called Verified Views.
We do, yeah.
What is the premise of Verified Views? I've listened to it, but for the audience.
So Verified Views has been running, I think, for 7 months now. And Verified Views is ultimately people who have, influencers, celebrities, who do have really strong opinions on things. So one of my little niggles, shall we say, with influencer marketing is I can meet people and they're like, yeah, but it's a load of crap, or it doesn't work, or I tried to work with that influencer and it did nothing. And actually, again, coming back to what I was saying, the reason as to why I set up Connects, a lot of you, those brands or those people are working with the wrong people for their business. And I always try to work with people who have a real skill set. So they may be a makeup artist who does YouTube tutorials, like a James Charles, mm-hmm. for all of his controversies, but mm-hmm. around how to do makeup. It could be someone who is a professional skier who now talks about fitness routines. So they really do have, like, the same way a brand is a storyteller, the influencers are an extension of that, and they are telling a story. And Verified Views basically was built from the fact I meet celebrities, I meet influencers all day, every day. And sometimes I come out and it's the most inspired and the most excited I am about the business and what I'm doing.
Yeah.
And I wanted to give those guys a platform to really talk about that too. So Frankie Bridge is now a really good friend of mine from working with her for like years. And her journey with mental health, it's amazing. Like, my view of work on mental health is like, don't talk about it. You're totally fine. Don't show any cracks. And actually, she's changed my perception of like, actually, sometimes I can go, do you know what? I'm just not going to come into work today. I'm going to work from home because I feel like shit. Yeah. Or I'm so knackered because I've gone from Ibiza to Liverpool to whatever. And getting her to then really show the clients as well, like, no, these are real people with real stories and real opinions of things. and the journeys that they've been on, or the way in which they built their profile, or the fact that, like, we had someone called Aruj, who's got neurofibromatosis, and she was a fashion influencer and was like, actually, I'm being really fake because I'm showing these like glam shots in her street style grungy outfits. And actually, no, the reason why I do it is because I can't, I've got this disease and I want to be able to talk about it openly. And the feedback that she got was unbelievable. So again, how do brands take learnings from that and be more open, be more honest, and be more diverse with the customers that they're working with?
Yeah, that's incredible. And that's exactly it. You kind of see, you know, these influencers and these people that you think you know, and then you have them come and have a conversation with you, and it's like, you come out of there with like so many learnings. It's so cool to see that like real side of a person.
Yeah.
And I think podcasting really brings that out too.
Completely.
Couldn't agree more.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Well, that's super exciting. So I kind of want to get into your area of expertise, which is obviously all things influencer marketing. There's so much going on right now. I don't even know like where to start. But kind of like back to basics here, like from your POV, you obviously have started this influencer marketing focus agency. Like why is this such a powerful tool for your clients from like your seat?
So with us, it does come down to the data and the creativity. So even from like a production point of view, a brand trying to get a shoot for a campaign, you can actually work with 10 influencers and do it for a tenth of the price, but actually the content will get a higher engagement because they're real people. And so for me, the benefit from a brand point of view of working with influencers is allowing them to work as an extension of your brand team, being able to elevate their stories, being able to really champion and support them, and at the same time, being able to make sure that you are seeing the data that drives your business. And that will vary. So actually, we work with a lot of retailers. That for me, obviously, with my ASOS hat on, is quite easy. So I can say, these influencers, your cost per acquisition, your cost per credit customer was X. And that then compares to your CRM, to your paid strategy, as however it may be. That gets harder when it's with someone like Hyundai. So we did a campaign with Hyundai and I can't say, you know what, your forecourt in Wolverhampton was really busy that weekend because I got that influencer to drive around and she looks really cute in a car. But actually what we can do is then use like cost per engagement metrics and look at how that compares across the rest of their marketing channels. So we don't do a one size fits all. It's very much around like, what is that business need? How are they currently measuring success across all of the different marketing mix? And how do we want to then show them as part of like the full remit of how it's performed?
Yeah, it's so data driven. And I just think that we can tend to forget that, especially from like our side of things.
Yeah.
From like
an influencer
side. And
the influencers that perform the best are the ones that are so in their insights themselves,
right,
or like their award style. And I was with an influencer the other day who basically has worked out if she ever wears anything over £32, people don't buy it. And obviously from RewardStyle, which is an affiliate network where she gets a percentage kickback every time she sells, she's like, I'm just not going to buy anything over £32 because I'm not going to get the affiliate kickback. It's not worth the time in me creating the content, writing the caption. And I'm going to just give my followers exactly what they want and what they want to buy.
Yeah. It's just like really having that understanding and just driving that home, because there's only so much that we can do from our side too. Like, again, going back to prioritizing. So she's being really smart and like looking at the numbers
there.
Making
the most out of it.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Are you seeing like a kind of, from your standpoint, like are brands completely sold on influencer marketing, or does it kind of vary? Like, are you doing a lot of convincing in your pitches? Like, how is that kind of look?
It really varies. Like, in a day, I can have four completely different conversations, and I will have clients that are like, we've done it and it's worked. We now need to do it at scale. Can you help us? Or we'll have people that are going, my boss keeps telling me that I should be talking about influencers. I don't really like influencers. What could we be doing? Or we have like, our product is really challenging, which is like, so we're doing one at the moment with a men's fertility kit. The technology is unbelievable. The messaging is so hard. So it's like, how can you help us to kind of get this out there and to raise awareness across the most targeted relevant people? I prefer going into a meeting, my northernness is coming out there, I prefer going into a meeting where people aren't convinced and then being able to see the difference where they're like, got it.
Yeah.
And often that may be like a really small test budget. But then again, we can negotiate. We know we've got a database of 54,000 influencers.
Sure.
We know, I get WhatsApped every time the Instagram algorithm changes by like 50 influencers asking me what it means and what they need to do. So like, actually for me, that is amazing to be able to handhold someone through the process and to show them, actually, based on what you wanted to do, this is how we've done it and this is what it's done.
Yeah, totally. So is your biggest tool for like sort of convincing a client, would it say like, hey, let's do a test. Like, I'm going to prove it to you.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's awesome. Okay. What do you think is the biggest disconnect between your sort of clients and influencers?
The biggest disconnect, and especially this year, and it's something that was quite irritating for me because probably like 3 months into setting up the business, I wrote a blog post around how I can't believe brands aren't doing more with fraudulent influencers. Mm-hmm. And I wrote it. It did really well in terms of like a business that's been up 3 months. Mm-hmm. And I think it had something like 600 views and it was picked up on the drum. And now I should have literally hammered that constantly, whereas I was like, box ticked, I've talked about it. People didn't realize it was an issue. And actually now it's really come into its own. And we do get a lot of nervousness from brands around, well, what happens if I pay someone who's bought their following, bought their engagement? So again, there's a bit of support that we can do there. Our database is built to make sure that from an algorithmic point of view, it picks up any anomalies. Mm-hmm. And we can make sure that they're not working with people who are fraudulent. Mm-hmm. Or obviously from a contractual point of view, our contract does state that if there's anything from like a morality point of view or from a fraudulent point of view, we've got them covered. But that is definitely the hottest topic that we're seeing at the moment.
Wow. Okay. And that was my next question, was kind of like, what kind of trends are you kind of currently seeing? So it's, and I've started to hear a lot more of that too. Like, it's such a buzzy thing. It's like, I think everyone's getting more buttoned up on both sides when it comes to that. Are there any other trends or like topics that you're kind of seeing that are like kind of being most talked about?
Yeah, so fraudulent fake followers is absolutely the number one, the thing I talk about every single day. Mm-hmm. Second is, so I think according to Nielsen it was, that last year 87% of all influencer campaigns were done on Instagram.
Wow.
So again, really crowded space now. Yep. I think a few brands that are a bit more innovative are starting to think about what other channels they could be using influencers for. Mm-hmm. So we're starting to do a little bit within IGTV. We're starting to do more with long form video, obviously podcasting, but also TikTok.
What's TikTok?
So TikTok used to be called Musical.ly.
Okay.
And it's the first Chinese app to hit a billion active users. Really young audience base, but again, how do you start thinking about the Gen Zs and what's next and kind of taking them on that journey too?
Sure. Wow, that's so interesting.
I know.
Are you a user of this?
I like have TikTok? It. Someone had taken my domain name before I'd even downloaded the app, which has never happened before. So that made me realize for the first time I was probably really far behind where I should be.
Yeah.
And anyone who's like 19 and younger that I meet, if I'm like, what? So I always do this at like, because I'm, again, so boring, but like family gatherings, christenings, weddings, and I see like family members. I'm like, so what apps are you using? Who do you follow? Da-da-da-da, just to try and you know, keep myself cool.
Yeah,
I'm cool
mom. Yeah, totally.
TikTok is the one that they keep talking about. My brother is 22. He's obsessed with it.
Is it like live streaming or?
Yeah, so it's video. It's a native video-based platform that mainly, you'll definitely have seen Musical.ly content, which is basically where you can have like an Ariana Grande track, but you sing to the camera over the top of it. And now it's more broader video content.
Yeah. Okay, cool. And then so on the topic of Instagram and Facebook, there's, I feel like you're kind of at the forefront. You obviously have so much knowledge around this, but I kind of feel like we're at this almost like big wave of change, right? This like almost big turning point just coming to head with, you know, IGTV kind of really ramping up and then also hearing about, you know, the change in likes and maybe taking that metric out of things. Like, what are you seeing on your side and like, how is this sort of impacting your clients today?
Especially in the UK, it's not massively impacting our clients yet. That's not to say that there aren't kind of contingency plans in place to do it. You're right, IGTV, they probably, being completely candid, didn't have the launch that they expected. But I think they've done quite a lot in terms of like the tech features to change that. So I actually recently just wrote a piece for The Drum, which was like, okay, Instagram are now hiring talent managers to look after IGTV. They are getting content creators, actors, musicians onto IGTV you've now got the functionality where it weaves into your timeline, so it's not sitting separately. There will be, at some point, I am sure, a whole host of additional data and insights around like view time, who, what, where. And again, once you've got more data and you can show the impact that's having, whether that's shoppable overlays of Instagram on IGTV too, that makes it more meaningful for a brand. Because again, there's more data to play with, there's more opportunity to show the return on investment that's having. And it obviously costs more, it takes more time to make an IGTV. Said a lot of Instagram and IGTVs in one go there. Than it does an Instagram grid post. So, but one of the concerns that I have more so from a brand point of view is people are like, holy shit, I should be on IGTV. And they're doing what brands did when Instagram launched, which is just like throwing everything at it and hoping something sticks. But it's more around like taking a step back and thinking like, what do I want to do here? What's my strategy? Who do I want to be known for on IGTV? And the same respect you have done, which is all around like, these are my beauty, get ready with me videos on IGTV. So people know, your audience know what to expect from you rather than just kind of seeing a million and one different things.
Yeah. Okay. So is that like sort of a tip for whether you're an influencer or you're a brand or a business owner? Is it like, just having a really clear strategy about what you're going to do on IGTV?
Completely.
And then is it also consistency? So like, do you have a recommendation there? Is it like one a week, one a month? Like, what do you think?
It all depends on what your business is and what it is that you're offering. And but yeah, consistency really is key. I would aim for a minimum of once a week.
Okay. And then what about with the changing of likes? Like how is that going to impact everybody? Like I've read articles that, you know, it's could be a really positive thing and, you know, they're trying to take that competition piece out and then more of a focus on the content. But what is your, what are your thoughts?
We're going to have to see. But one of the main reasons why it's been hailed a really positive move from Instagram is because other people can't see the likes. But again, from a lot of the research and the focus groups we do, the content creators, the people on Instagram can still see how many likes they got. And the brand, because they in the contracts can see and own that data and we've got to be able to say how many engagements they got, the brand will still know who's performed well, who hasn't performed well. And I think a lot of the mental health issues with social media and being able to compare yourself as easily as possible, you as that person and you as that like 15-year-old girl who, and I think it was actually on Danielle Pisa's podcast with you where she was saying like her niece had only got 11 likes and like on one Instagram post and two of her friends didn't speak to her for like a week. Great, because her friends can't see it, that won't happen. However, she'll still know that she's under-indexed on likes on that post. I mean, I'm sure a 14-year-old girl doesn't go, I think I've under-indexed on my average engagement rate this week.
Right, and below the threshold, what am I going to do? Like,
I don't realize how much marketing jargon I have until some of this stuff comes out my mouth.
I get it, though. No, I totally get that.
So yeah, so I think personally, if you are someone who is thriving off seeing those likes and getting that social validation, that still exists. So I'm not sure it's going to make a massive impact around mental health.
Right. That makes a lot of sense though. So how do you see the sort of influencer marketing landscape evolving over like the next like few years?
So one of the things I always find funny is that everyone's like, ooh, shiny new thing, influencer. The word influencer is like pretty gross, but it is what it is. It says, does what it says on the tin. And for me, it won't be influencers sitting in silo. And actually we saw this in social media 8-9 years ago, which was like, does social media sit within the PR team? Does it sit within the broader marketing team? Does it sit as its own? And I personally was pushed from pillar to post at multiple businesses trying to work out where social media should sit. It's exactly the same thing we're going through now with influencers. It'll be the exact same thing we go through a podcast. Will be, where does that team work? And how does it be how is it seen as part of the full-on marketing mix rather than a thing that sits in silo? And with that, what that means is brands will start doing, please, desperately, less one-off ad hoc influencer campaigns, but actually identifying fewer people who work really well for the business and actually working with them longer term. And also letting influencers do what they're good at. So we get a degree of it, but actually we push back a lot, which is, no, these people have got an audience because they know what their audience engages with. They know what sells well for them and let them be as creative as they need to be on their feeds rather than trying to script it and make it work for that business.
Yeah, totally. So a bit more like freedom, flexibility and that exactly. kind of thing. Yeah. Totally. What about from a platform standpoint? Like, obviously, you know, Facebook, Instagram's not going away anytime soon, but do you think like, you know, obviously we've talked about the rise of podcasts. So do you think it's like emphasis on podcasts, like YouTube, you know, Twitter, like what kind of, what are your thoughts?
But that just made me think, actually, for the 3 years we've had the business, nothing at all that we have ever done has been on Twitter. Which is weird. When I started at ASOS, everything we did was on Twitter.
Yeah.
Everything. So we see primarily Instagram, which is probably like 60% of the business. We are seeing more podcasts. We are seeing more IGTV briefs coming through. We're actually seeing a lot of closing of multiple platforms. So when you've got like ASOS_France, ASOS_Spain, ASOS_studio, and actually just like one platform, one message, having that consistency.
Yeah.
So we've done that and doing that with a couple of our brands.
Sure.
TikTok.
I got to do my research now after this one.
Yeah. And yeah. still more video content.
Okay. Yeah. Video.
All video.
Yeah. Fair enough. This was so great. I feel like this is a great place to end. But before you go, where can everyone like keep up with you, follow you, the podcast? Like, tell us everything.
Cool. So our podcast is on Spotify. It's on the podcast apps and it is Verified Views. My social is all the same, which is Sedge Beswick. So like hedge with an S. We're just saying earlier, I get called everything from sledge to sludge to surge.
I can't believe the surge. That was like, that used to be like a soda back in the US.
Really?
Do you have that here?
Surge? No.
Okay, it's like a green soda.
Oh, that's so disgusting.
It was like a Mountain Dew. Anyway.
I get a lot. So sedge is the type of weed that grows around a pond.
Okay.
And I very occasionally, someone's like, oh, are you named after a weed? I'm like, strangely enough, no, I'm not.
Oh my God, ridiculous.
But thank you so
okay,
much.
Okay, cool. Thank you. This was a great convo. Thank you everyone for listening. Don't forget to subscribe, rate, and review if you did enjoy this episode or find any value. And we will catch you next time. See you guys later.